Welcome to another deep dive. Today, we're going to try to unravel a bit of a historical mystery.
A mystery. Sounds intriguing.
Yeah. We're going back to ancient Israel with Dr. John Oswald's lectures on the Book of Kings.
Ah, Kings. A book full of twists and turns.
Absolutely. It really is. So we're going to focus on the reign of King Jeroboam II.
Okay, Jeroboam II. Now,
it was a time when the kingdom, well, at least on the surface, seemed to be flourishing.
Prosperity, success, that sort of thing.
You got it. But here's the thing. You'd think a thriving kingdom equals a happy God, right?
Seems logical.
But that's where things get interesting. Because the Book of Kings, well, it actually labels Jeroboam II as evil.
Evil. Okay, that's a strong word. So what's the story there?
Right. There must be more to it. I mean, how do you get labeled evil when your kingdom's doing so well?
Well, you've hit on a really crucial point because, you see, the Book of Kings, it uses a different yardstick, you know, to measure its rulers.
Different from what we might use today.
Yeah, you know, we might look at economic indicators or military victories.
Things like that, the outward signs of success.
Right, exactly. But for kings, the yardstick is faithfulness to God.
Ah, okay. So it's an internal measure. It's about the spiritual state.
You got it. And that's where Jeroboam II falls short. He achieves all this worldly success. You know, the kingdom is expanding, but he continues with these practices of his predecessor, Jeroboam III.
I see. So it's not just about what he does, it's about what he allows.
That's a good way to put it. He allows, even embraces, these idolatrous practices, turning away from God's covenant.
So he's basically living a double life, successful on the outside, but spiritually bankrupt on the inside.
That's a good way to put it, yes.
Okay, so let's rewind a little bit. Before Jeroboam II takes the throne, well, the region is a bit of a pressure cooker, right?
It is. You've got Assyria.
The big bad wolf of the ancient world.
That's one way to put it. They're on this huge expansion spree, just gobbling up kingdoms left and right.
Yeah, for like over a century. It's like living next to, a constantly erupting volcano.
You're always on edge, never knowing when the lava's going to flow your way.
And then, boom, around 800 BC, things change. For about 55 years, things quiet down. And that's where our friend Jeroboam II, he steps onto the scene.
Right place, right time. A window of opportunity.
And does he ever seize it?
Mm.
He reigns for 41 years, a time of peace and prosperity for Israel. He manages to get back land that had been lost, you know, to the Syrians.
Pushing those borders out.
Yeah. All the way from the Red Sea in the south to, well, basically modern-day Syria in the north.
Talk about a comeback.
Yeah. But despite all of this, he's still called evil. So what gives? It just doesn't seem to add up, does it?
It's a real head scratcher, especially when you consider the timing of his reign, right? Right when Assyria takes a break, Jeroboam II flourishes.
Makes you wonder, why would God allow him to succeed at all if he was so blatantly disobeying him?
Well, this is where we really start to see the depth of God's mercy.
It's a recurring theme, isn't it? Throughout the Bible, but especially in Kings.
Oh, absolutely. The text makes it clear that, look, Jeroboam's success, it wasn't a reward for his actions. It was an act of grace toward Israel, a chance for them to change, to turn back to God.
Like a wake-up call, maybe. A second chance.
Perhaps. But there's this tension, you know? You have this outwardly successful but spiritually flawed king.
And then you have the Israelites.
Yeah.
Probably thinking, hey, things are great. God must be happy with us.
Exactly. It's like they're missing a piece of the puzzle, and that's where the prophet Amos comes in.
Ah, Amos. He's not going to let him get away with that, is he?
Oh, no. Amos is about to shake things up. He lived and preached during Jeroboam II's reign.
So right in the thick of it all.
Right in the thick of it. And his message adds a whole other dimension to this whole story, this historical mystery we're trying to unravel.
Okay. So set the scene for us.
Yeah.
Put us there in ancient Israel.
All right. Imagine this. You're living in Israel during Jeroboam II's reign. Things are good. The Assyrian threat has vanished.
You're eating well. Life is peaceful. You're feeling pretty good about yourself.
Exactly. You'd probably think you were on God's good side.
But Amos, well, he's not buying it.
Not at all. Instead of celebrating, you know, joining the party, he's like this giant buzzkill.
Yeah. He's calling them out. Big time.
He's delivering this scathing critique of Israel's complacency, this social injustice that he sees everywhere.
So while everyone else is popping champagne, Amos is like, hold on a minute.
He's like, you're missing the point.
So what is Amos seeing that everyone else seems to be missing?
He saw this facade, this prosperity that was masking something a lot uglier.
Ah, so he's seeing beneath the surface.
Exactly. He's pointing out that while, you know, everyone's busy building fancy houses, throwing these lavish feasts.
Right, living the good life.
Right. They're completely ignoring the plight of the poor and vulnerable in their society.
So it's like they got so caught up in celebrating their success that they totally forgot about justice, about compassion.
That's a great way to put it, yeah. And Amos, well, he connects their actions to their inner spiritual state.
So it's not just about doing the right things. It's about having the right heart.
Exactly. And he saw right through all those extravagant religious rituals and offerings.
All show, no substance.
You got it. He's like, you can't just go through the motions, you know, while ignoring God's call to actually care for the marginalized, for those in need.
So he's basically saying their opulent lifestyles, this religious hypocrisy, well, it was a direct contradiction to their supposed faithfulness to God.
Right. They were playing the part, but their hearts were far from God.
So everyone else is focused on the good times, and Amos is, what, sounding the alarm?
Yeah, he's like a lone voice in the wilderness. He's warning them, saying this outward success, it's masking a much deeper decay, a spiritual decay.
Like they're living in a bubble that's about to burst.
And that bubble, he predicts, will burst. Well, that's Assyria.
Oh, right. Assyria. We talked about them before. The sleeping giant.
Right. They might be quiet for now, but Amos, he sees their return as a direct consequence of, well, of Israel turning away from God.
He's saying their sin, this disregard for justice, for righteousness, well, it's weakened them. It's made them vulnerable.
Morally and spiritually, they're ripe for the picking.
That's a sobering thought. Their internal state, their spiritual health, it directly impacted their external security.
Absolutely. And that's where Amos's message is so relevant, even for us today. Think about it. How often do we get caught up in our own pursuits? You know, chasing success, comfort.
Building our own little kingdoms.
Exactly. And we forget about those in need around us.
It's easy to get caught up in the rat race, isn't it? Striving for more, more, more.
But Amos, he forces us to pause, you know, to ask ourselves, at what cost are we building our success?
Are we sacrificing our values, our compassion in the process?
That's the question. And it's a question we all need to wrestle with, no matter who we are, what we believe. Amos's message, it transcends time and culture. It's this timeless call to examine our hearts.
To align our actions with our values.
And to prioritize justice and compassion over, well, over personal gain.
You know, it's interesting. We've been talking about how Jeroboam II was considered evil, you know, for his idolatry. But the text also tells us that God used him. God used him to restore the boundaries of Israel. He even says that God saved Israel through him.
Right. It almost feels like a contradiction. How can an unfaithful king achieve such great things, you know, be used by God in that way?
Yeah, it's hard to wrap your head around.
It is. And that's the beauty and complexity of God's grace. It reminds us that his plans, well, they don't always fit into our neat little boxes.
He works in mysterious ways, as they say.
He does. He can work through anyone, even those who are, well, far from perfect, to accomplish his purposes.
So it's not about the person. It's about God's plan working through them.
You can say that. It challenges us, you know, to look beyond just outward appearances and to recognize that God can use even our flaws, our imperfections, for his glory.
It's a reminder that God's ways are higher than our ways, right? Mm.
They are. We might judge someone based on their actions, but God, well, he sees their heart. He sees the potential for growth, for change.
So it's not just about saying, well, God can use anyone, so it doesn't matter what I do.
No, not at all.
It's about recognizing that God can work through us. But it's also about striving to align our lives with his will.
Trying to live in a way that honors him. To do what's right. To be better.
And that's a tension, I think, that we'll continue to explore as we delve deeper into Amos's message and what it means for us today. Speaking of Amos, let's get back to some of the societal issues he condemned. So we know he was outraged by the exploitation of the poor, but what were some of the specific? What exactly was he calling out?
Well, you know, we talked about those lavish feasts earlier.
Yeah, the wealthy indulging themselves, ignoring the plight of the poor.
Well, Amos, he didn't hold back. He used this really vivid imagery to expose their hypocrisy. I mean, he compared the wealthy Israelites to cows of Bashan.
Cows of Bashan. That's not very flattering.
Not at all. You know, fattened and pampered, lounging on ivory beds, indulging in these huge feasts. While the poor, they were struggling to survive.
It's such a stark contrast, this extravagance and excess on one hand, and then this poverty and neglect on the other.
It is. And it's a picture of social inequality that feels all too familiar even today, doesn't it?
It does. It makes you wonder if we've really learned anything at all.
Right. It's this timeless critique of the human tendency to prioritize personal comfort and pleasure over the needs of others.
And a reminder that prosperity without justice, without compassion, it can be a recipe for disaster.
It can. It becomes a breeding ground for selfishness, for indifference. And it's so easy to get caught up in our own little bubbles, isn't it? To become desensitized to the suffering around us.
To just tune it out.
Exactly. But Amos's message, it's a call to wake up, you know, to open our eyes to the injustices that exist.
To look around and see what's really going on.
In our own communities, in the world. And it's a call to action, to move beyond just feeling bad, you know, and to actually do something.
To step up and make a difference.
Yeah. He challenged the Israelites and he challenges us to let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never failing stream. It's beautiful, you know?
It is. That image of a just, an equitable society where everyone's needs are met, where everyone is treated with dignity. It's a powerful image.
It is. And it makes you think, what would Amos say to us today?
Yeah. If he could see our world with all its complexities, with all its problems, what would he see? What injustices would he call out? It's almost like Amos had a time machine.
Right. A time machine.
Yeah. Like he could see our world today. Think about it. We have so much wealth, technology that would blow his mind.
And yet.
Yet we still struggle with poverty, with inequality, with exploitation. It's everywhere you look.
Yeah. I think if Amos were to walk the streets of any major city today,
yeah,
he'd be heartbroken. I mean, truly heartbroken by the disparities he'd see.
The gap between the rich and the poor.
Exactly. Imagine him seeing, you know, people sleeping on the streets.
Right outside these glittering skyscrapers.
Yeah. Just steps away from luxury apartments. Or witnessing the environmental damage, you know.
The way we're just trashing the planet.
Yeah. This relentless pursuit of economic growth at all costs, it wouldn't sit well with him. Not at all.
He'd probably have a lot to say about our obsession with stuff, too.
Oh, for sure. Our consumerism, you know, the way we're constantly bombarded with advertising telling us we need more, more, more.
Bigger houses, fancier cars, the latest gadgets.
He'd see right through that. Remember, Amos was a shepherd. A man of the land.
Lived simply, close to nature.
Yeah. He'd see our consumerist culture as a form of idolatry, you know?
Worshipping stuff instead of God.
Exactly. A misplaced focus. Mm. A focus on material possessions rather than, well, than justice, compassion, spiritual growth. Those things that really matter.
So what would he say to us then if he was here today? Would he just tell us to give up all our possessions? You know, live in poverty?
I don't think it's about, you know, abandoning everything.
Becoming hermits.
Yeah. It's more about examining our priorities, yeah, our values, our motivations.
Looking inward.
Yeah. Asking those tough questions, you know, like, how much is enough? What truly brings lasting happiness? Are we using what we have to make a positive impact? Or are we contributing to the problem?
To the injustice, to the inequality.
Exactly. Yeah. It's about aligning our actions with our beliefs. Not just talking the talk, but walking the walk. You know, putting our faith into action.
So it's not enough to just feel bad about these things.
Right. It's about doing something, taking action.
But where do you even begin? It feels so, so overwhelming.
Well, I think, you know, it starts with education. Learning about the issues, understanding the root causes of poverty, of inequality, of environmental degradation.
And then what?
Well, then we can support those organizations that are doing the work, you know,
yeah,
on the ground, making a real difference.
Through volunteering, donating.
Yeah. Or even just spreading awareness, you know, talking about these issues, making sure people know what's going on.
And making different choices, right? In our own lives.
Absolutely. Being mindful of what we buy, supporting ethical businesses.
Companies that are doing things the right way.
Exactly. And advocating for better policies, policies that promote justice, that promote sustainability.
It's like all these little things.
They add up.
Yeah. They create a ripple effect.
And I think most importantly, it's about treating each other with kindness, with empathy, with respect.
Just basic human decency.
Yeah. Remember, Amos's message wasn't just about changing systems. It was about changing hearts. It was about recognizing the inherent worth of every person.
That we're all connected. part of something bigger than ourselves.
Exactly. And these seemingly small acts of kindness,
a smile, a helping hand,
they matter. They can have a huge ripple effect, creating a more compassionate world one interaction at a time.
This deep dive, it's really opened my eyes to how relevant Amos's message still is today. You know, yeah. It's like he was speaking directly to us.
It's amazing, isn't it? Centuries ago, but it still feels so urgent, so timely.
It's a reminder that this fight for justice, for righteousness, it's a timeless one. Every generation has to grapple with it.
And it's a fight worth having. Remember, Amos's message wasn't one of despair. It was one of hope.
Hope for a better future?
Yeah. He believed that change was possible. Yeah. That even when faced with huge injustice, people have this power to make things better, to create a more just world.
That's a powerful message to hold on to. And they can fuel our actions, inspire us to keep pushing forward.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up this deep dive, I just want to encourage everyone listening to really reflect on Amos's message. You know, let it sink in and ask yourself, what can I do? How can I contribute to a more just and compassionate world? What kind of legacy do I want to leave behind?
Those are big questions, but important ones. So until next time, keep seeking truth, keep questioning, keep diving deep.